Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Adam Posen is the one to speak to today. The central bank news flow is extraordinary from Tokyo, where Dr. Posen comes to us, to London, to Frankfurt. Charles Evans is just speaking, Adam, on CNBC. We'll get to that if we have time. We are thrilled to have you, Adam, today. Why are you in Tokyo?
Abenomics, Tom. I think it's a genuine time of change in Japan, and of change in a positive way. I was at a conference at the Bank of Japan the first part of this week, and I've been meeting with Japanese officials, and I think good things are afoot.
Okay, let's talk about this in later in our half hour. I completely was surprised by the body language today of Governor Carney before the House of Commons. It was a cordial discussion. I didn't think that much news out of it, but boy, there was just a whole bunch of body language going on. Were you surprised by the discussion, and how should the House of Commons greet the head of the Bank of Canada?
I think it was a healthy set of remarks, Tom, and I agree with you. There wasn't that much news. Governor Carney confirmed what had been clear for the last few weeks, which is his discussion of nominal GDP targeting that came out in a speech, I guess, in December, was misinterpreted in the press. I can understand why people misinterpreted it, but he's been pretty clear since then that he didn't really intend to go down that road, at least not without much greater reason. And I think he was very healthy and calm in showing proper deference to democratic accountability. You know, and the Treasury Select Committee of the House of Commons, I was before them just two weeks ago. And, you know, it's very different from the American Congressional Committee. You don't have the huge amount of staff. You don't have the elected officials up on a big podium looking down at you.
Yeah.
You don't have to be as deferential, but you have to be respectful. And I think he did a good body language on that.
The body language to me, or the backstory, is we've got Hildenbrand, ex-Swiss National Bank. We've got Alistair Darling, both writing in the FT, about a need for capital. Are we heading towards where the Bank of England and even the Fed will just demand, almost Basel-like, a need for more capital?
Well, I think the Bank of England had already been moving in that direction, to give credit where credit's due to outgoing Governor King and Deputy Governor Tucker and those people. But yes, there's a very strong intellectual case to be made. Whatever else you do in terms of shoring up the banking system, put in more capital. Hildenbrand deserves credit. He and his successor, the Thomas Jordan at the Swiss National Bank, have very consistently said to Credit Suisse and to UBS, look, whatever else you're going to do, wherever you are internationally, you're a Swiss bank and we need you to have a lot more capital. And I think that's a good precedent. The question is always, what's the cutbacks on lending in the short term while they build up the capital, and does it disadvantage you internationally if your country demands more capital than the other ones? I think the Swiss government and the Swiss Central Bank have shown the right sense, which is cutting off some lending temporarily is small compared to letting the banks blow up, and what matters is the home front.
Are the U.S. banks overcapitalized? Jamie Dimon and others get really going on this. As you go day by day, do you feel that they've got enough capital?
No. I mean, I certainly feel they're better capitalized than a lot of other countries' banks. In particular, it's less to do with the great measures they've undertaken and more to do with the fact that only a few of the big banks in the U.S. truly got blown up during the crisis. But I don't think that they have too much capital, and I'm just sorry that anybody's saying that at this point. The pushback there was on the liquidity requirements, which the Bank of England and others, and certainly the Fed, recognized was going to be a problem. I think that was somewhat more legitimate.
Yeah, Mario, to switch gears here for a few minutes, Adam, and then we'll come back on Abenomics as you are in Tokyo. Draghi speaks. Draghi moves the market. The euro, Adam, 135.60 down to 134.60. There just seems to be a new ferment, whether it's Ireland or Italy or Spain. Do you wake up at the Peterson Institute and say, oh no, another bout of European crisis?
No. I remember waking up starting in 2010 and through much of 2011 almost daily at the Bank of England saying, oh my God, another European crisis. But a colleague of mine, a couple colleagues of mine at the Pearson Institute, Jacob Kierkegaard, Fred Bergsten, Anders Asland, have been on the ball and saying, look, the political will to stay together both at the elite and at the average person level in Europe is stronger than the Americans give it credit for, and therefore the tough medicine that they're undertaking is going to be sustained for more than people think. I'm not sure that's the right economic response, but they got the policies right. They got the politics right.
So it's
going ahead.
Yeah, I really recommend, folks, a careful read of Jacob Kierkegaard's work at the Pearson Institute. Like all the Europeans, he goes on too long, but boy, is it worth it with a pencil in your hand
Washington
to really work through it.
And a number of people, his name came up.
Yeah,
people were saying
they're terrific reads. Real privilege.
No, we're very proud of Jacob. We hired him. We developed him. We've promoted him, and he deserves it. He's done great things. But on the substance, as much as I want to promote Jacob, and everyone should go to www.piie.com.
I know, but it's
not just Jacob. Yeah. It's also Nick Lardy. It's also me. It's also Joe Gagnon. It's also anyway.
Now you're getting carried away, Adam.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, but the thing to note about the euro area is it is. Two things. First, Draghi was very careful not to talk down the currency, which was entirely right.
Of course.
Not of course, because Trichet did used to choose to talk down the currency, and Draghi said he wouldn't do that. And he said rightly that the strength of the euro is because of these fundamentals, that because the ECB stood up last summer under him and said, we will do what it takes.
Right. Michael Darda, Adam, the other day published a chart of Japan's painful nominal GDP. He takes it back to 1991 as a struggle. How are they going to get back on track for economic growth?
I think they've got two-thirds of the way by the policies already announced. First is their Bank of Japan is going to be required to pursue a higher inflation target and seriously pursue it, meaning actually do something. And I think they will start buying longer duration Japanese bonds and possibly corporate bonds once the new governor comes in April.
Equities?
I don't think initially, but they obviously have both the legal and the operational ability to do it. They've done it before, but I don't think they need to also because the equities are up quite a bit since this all came on the scene. So that's the first leg. And the second leg is fiscal policy. They're trying to balance. It's not perfect, but they're trying to balance shifting the tax code to more heavy taxes on consumption, lower taxes on investment, spread it out over a couple of years. Those two things will get them a long way, along with the fact that the yen's already moved a lot. The one thing that's missing is the Abe regime is still being a little reluctant to engage on trade with its neighbors to get involved in the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations. That would be the final thing I think that would be needed to put Japan over the top.
Do they manage to do it, I guess, is basically the question, because this has been talked about for so long. And how much of it is what they can do and how much of it is psychological?
I mean, Michael, my feeling is it's very much psychological, ideological, that you look at what the Federal Reserve has done, you look at what the ECB has done, you look at what the Bank of England has done, they've made material differences to lending conditions and to confidence, and they've done it by buying assets that are not like cash and setting credible commitments to macro goals, be it keeping the euro together or the thresholds the Fed now has. And Bank of Japan just hasn't done that. They've had a series of governors, in particular the last one, who insisted that they couldn't do anything. They didn't really believe in the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And also in the Bank of Japan's case, as Japanese economists have documented and the BIS has documented, they kept buying short-term bills. They bought things that were essentially printed cash to buy cash, and you don't expect that to have a big effect on the economy. There's a reason why the Fed and the Bank of England buy 3 to 10 or 3 to 15-year treasuries. And when the BOJ starts doing that, I think that'll make a difference.
How much of this is generational? My visits to Japan have that oddity that everybody enjoys and the wonderment of Kyoto, et cetera. The Euro folks break into significant new weakness here as Draghi speaks. The president says, Draghi says ECB is accommodative and ready to provide liquidity. The Euro plunges, no other word for it. But is there a generational change finally in Japan? Do we really move away from the post-World War II, post-industrial LDP mindset?
That's a really good point, Tom, and I think people in the West, in the U.S., Europe, have underestimated extended generational change. It's understandable because the top politicians, the current prime minister, the current foreign minister, and finance minister, they're all people you've seen before and are quite old. But, you know, enough time has passed that in this very important bureaucracy in the Bank of Japan, and particularly importantly in the Japanese corporate sector, you've got new cadres of new people, and it isn't the same failure, same sense of defeatism. You know, there was a period there where people in the West and occasionally in Japan kept saying, oh, it's high-level stagnation. They're happy with that. They're okay. I don't get that sense anymore. I think the people in Japan do want change.
Adam, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013, Bloomberg LP.